So what is all of us? What are we engaged in? What do we want in life? You say we want two things. What do I want? So many. No, but all the things we want, everything, can be divided into two. Atyantika Dukha Nivritti and Paramanand Prapti. So these are the two things that we all need. Atyantik Dukha Nivritti means complete removal of sorrow. Not partial removal, like if I tell you, okay, you know, you will be fine for a year, but then you will have sorrow the rest of your life. No, 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 I don't want that. I want permanent removal of sorrow. I never want to have any sorrow for the rest of my life, not only for me, but my family, my friends, nobody should have sorrow. So that's the first goal of every human being. Atyantik Dukha Nivritti. And second is Paramananda Prapti. That means getting the permanent supreme joy. Again, if somebody says, you know, you'll have wonderful happiness for next 10 years. But then after that, no, I don't want that. I want permanent joy. And not the little joy, I want the highest joy. You ask anybody, they want the best. Nobody wants, you know, second rate or third rate joy. So if you want total removal of sorrow and permanent eternal highest joy, unfortunately, what do? We look for it in the world. Maybe this wife did not give me permanent prapti. Maybe the next wife will. This job didn't give me, so maybe the next job will. This town didn't give me, maybe the next town will. This country didn't give me. So we always keep changing our circumstances, our situations, thinking that I will get that Paramananda Prapti and Atyantik Dukha Nivritti. But Bhagwan tells us in the Bhagavad Gita that the only way to get these two is through the following the Gita path, where once you realize that I am of the nature of Supreme Self, I am of the nature of Om. So once I realize I'm of the nature of Om, and then I start living that. See, one is having heard it from Bhagwan, but when I start living as that consciousness, which all these great saints, prophets, leaders, they all did. They lived like that. Like they are this Atman, they are this Self. They didn't only just, you and I, we learn it here, we repeat, and then we go out and we forget. But they lived that path. So when I can not only listen to the teacher, but live it and apply it and bring it into my life, then only I can get Paramanand Prapti and Atyantika Dukha Nivritti. So here Bhagwan tells Arjuna in the second chapter that you are that Atma, you are that Self. And then he tells him how wise people live in this world. And the entire third chapter, he tells him how to act in the world, what is karma yoga, and how karma yoga can lead to jnana yoga. So practice of right action can lead to knowledge. And the fourth chapter, he does not wait for Arjuna's question. He directly states, imam vivasvate yogam proktavan aham avyayam vivasvan manave praha manurikshvakave bravit. So he says this karma yoga, this knowledge of not only karma yoga, this entire Bhagavad Gita knowledge was given by me to the sun god, Vivasvan, the sun god. And the sun god taught it to Manu, who was the first human being. And then Manu taught it to Ikshvaku. Last week we heard about Ikshvaku. He was a royal sage. Even though he was a king, he was a very evolved master and how he lived his life. So now this Arjuna may ask, okay, if you taught it to the royal kings and the king went one to the other, one king and then his prince, and then, so how is it that I did not hear about it until now? Why was this knowledge not given to me? So Bhagwan will continue in the second verse, chapter 4, second verse. Evam parampara praptam
एवं परंपरा
इमं राजर्षयो विदुः इमं राजर्षयो विदुः सकाले नेह महता योगो नष्टः परन्तपः All together, evam parampara praptam imam rajarshayo viduh sakale neha mahata yogo nashta parantapa. So Sri Bhagavan continues, he says evam, so this knowledge, in this way, imam, this knowledge, parampara praptam, parampara means tradition. Traditionally, as we said, we believe in Guru Shishya Parampara, that originally the Lord is the Guru. That's why we chant that Sadashiva Samarambham Shankaracharya Madhyamam Asmadacharya Paryantam Vande Guru Paramparam. So I prostrate to the Guru Shishya Parampara. The origin is the Lord Himself. And in the, of course, here they say Shiva. But the Lord, whatever form of Lord. And then Shankaracharya Madhyamam. The Chinmaya mission is based on Shankaracharya Ji's, Bhagavan Shankaracharya Ji's Advaita philosophy. And Asmadacharya Paryantam. And our Acharya, our teacher. So from the Lord came to Shankaracharya Ji, to from them to Gurudev. And that's why I prostrate to the Guru Shishya Parampara. So he says this knowledge, Parampara praptam, in the traditional way, was passed on to the Rajarshi. Rajarishi means the kings who were royal sages. Even though they were kings like Janaka, like Ikshvaku and so on, even though they were king, Ashoka could also come in that category where he later on evolved to become a very, you know, great saint, not only a king. So he says these kings knew this knowledge. But this knowledge, kalena, with time, mahata kalena, with long period of time, iha means here, yogo, this yoga, nashta parantapa, nashta, it was destroyed. So even though this knowledge was passed on by me to the sun god, to the manu, to Ikshvaku, but the Ikshvaku was the Ramchandraji was in his dynasty, but still this knowledge did not get passed on, but somewhere got destroyed. So this, even though traditionally it happened, but it somehow it got destroyed. So then Arjuna might ask, in the first verse you said avyayam, this knowledge is immutable, cannot be destroyed, and now you are saying knowledge was destroyed. So why is this discrepancy in between the first and second verse? So Bhagavan will explain. So first we'll talk about, he calls him Parantapa. The last word of the second verse is Parantapa. Arjuna, that was one of Arjuna's name. Paran means enemies. Tapa means the scorcherer. So one who could scorch his enemies, who could make them fear. Like in our case, who is a Parantapa? CHP. You are driving 70 miles on I-5 and the speed limit is 65. You are driving 75 and then suddenly you CHP car, you immediately brake. Oh, I hope he didn't catch me. Immediately you cool down. All your ardor and your speed and everything cools down. So similarly, Arjuna was said to be Parantapa. That means when he came to the battlefield, Tapa means he scorched Paran, all the enemy soldiers, anybody on the other side. If they saw Arjuna's chariot and his, you know, royal figure, they said, this is our last day on earth. We are not going to survive. So the idea was that Arjuna was such a great warrior. So he says that now is your greatest challenge. You have overcome so many other challenges. That's why he uses the word Parantapa. So he says this knowledge was available and is still available. It's not that the knowledge disappeared. The knowledge was always there. Avyayam, he says this yoga was always there. But why was this knowledge not available to us? Because there are no adhikaris. The right students were not there. If the right student is not there, then the teacher has no incentive to teach. And that's what happened. People thought, it's not that important. In the ancient times, people were, you know, living in simplicity in the forest or in little villages and surrounded by trees and the river, and it was very peaceful. They would study, they would work, go to the guru. But then as life became busier in the cities and more crowd and more competition, and, you know, slowly people, you know, marne ki bhi fursat nahi, you know, they are so busy in acquiring a living that spirituality became a second, not that important, you know, and the people lost interest. They say it's okay. After 65, we will learn. So what Swamiji in his commentary says, so this knowledge is supposed to remove sorrow. So you say, I will suffer till 65, but after 65, I will remove my sorrow. Now, what kind of thinking is that? But what happens is same thing. For example, now all of you are here and you are interested and participating, but tomorrow, suppose only one or two show up, and even they are just looking at their watch, waiting when Bal Vihar will end. Then I may still prepare, but then that enthusiasm, you know, it goes down. So that's what they are saying, that this knowledge was hidden. It was hidden, not deliberately, but nobody was interested. So when nobody was interested, then the teacher said, you know, what can we do? And slowly, this knowledge started fading. It was not destroyed, but it started fading. Like we see in the world also, some of the languages are fading. Like the Cherokee Indian, you know, the American Indian languages. There are hardly any people who speak. And sooner or later, it might become an extinct language. Some of the American Indian dialects. In India also, we find some of the tribal dialects are going down. Other, it can also be destroyed, like the Spanish. I was reading a history of Mexico and South America a few years back. And when the Spanish conquered Mexico and South America, they systematically destroyed the culture, the Inca culture and the language. They made sure that nobody spoke that language. They made sure all the religious books were burnt of those times. The priests were killed and the temples were broken and converted into churches. So they systematically destroyed the entire culture, all from Mexico all the way through entire South America. So the language can either be systematically destroyed, but most of the time it fades with time if it's not used. That's what they say. If you don't use it, you lose it. So language and culture. That's why Gurudev said that even though we are here in the States, but our Hindu culture and traditions need to be preserved. That's why he started this system of Bal Vihar, where our children are taught this same idea so that this knowledge may not fade. That was his idea, and we owe such a debt of gratitude to Pujya Gurudev for bringing this knowledge to us. And what happened to the rishis is that they then went into the Himalayas. They said, or into the forest, I'm just going to meditate over there. Koi nahi aata hai, nobody comes to learn, then what is the purpose? And if somebody is interested, they'll come. And that's what Pujya Gurudev did. He went to the up to the Himalayas. He met, you know, Tapovan Maharaj, learned from him. But then he did not just stay there. Even though he had realized the truth, he had become one with Brahman. There was no need for him to come. It was his compassion for us. He said the people, you know, in India, the plains, and then subsequently in other parts of the world, need this knowledge because they are suffering. And so it was his compassion that even though there was so much opposition, so much difficulty, and in later years, such ill health, but he still kept on traveling to spread this knowledge. So we owe eternal debt of gratitude to Pujya Gurudev. And then all his subsequent, you know, disciples like Swami Tejomayananda Ji, Swami Ishwarananda Ji, who comes here, Bodhatmananda Ji, Vimal Chaitanya ji. So all of these students of Pujya Gurudev, and then recently we heard Padmaja Joshi ji, and how she also is such a devotee of Pujya Gurudev. So we owe so much to all these teachers who come here periodically. They again get nothing out of it. They don't get paid or anything. They do it out of love and compassion for this knowledge. So that is what this knowledge, it seems it will fade away if we don't make an effort to preserve it. So we have to make an effort to bring it into our life and to make this knowledge available. As I said, if you know, giving somebody a Bhagavad Gita is a wonderful gift. So that Gurudev's commentary on the Gita, so that maybe they may use it sometime or the other. Or encouraging people, you know, if they're not bringing their children to Bal Vihar or not coming to Gita class, encouraging people to come. So that is should be our duty to spread this knowledge. And faith in this knowledge and faith in God is very important. Without faith, definitely this knowledge dies. That's why in the next verse we'll talk about Shraddhavan Labhate Jnanam. Talking about faith in God, there was this man working in a post office, and he saw a letter, had a return address, some old lady's handwriting with her name, and the envelope was addressed to God, just God. There was no address. He said, who would write a letter to God? So he opened the letter, and inside he found a note. He didn't know where to deliver. Who is God? How am I going to deliver this letter? So he opened it. And there was this old lady, and she was saying, God, you know, I'm writing you this letter. I had $100 in my wallet, and I was in the park, and I opened my purse, and my little wallet fell out, and I don't know where, and I can't find it. And it had $100 in it, and I had kept those $100 because I've invited my friends next Friday for dinner, and I was going to use the $100 to feed them, and now I don't have any money. My social security check is not going to come for a month, till the end of the month. And God, can you please send $100? You know. So she had faith. So this man was very touched, you know, that look at this poor old lady, you know, she lost her money. So he went round from everybody collecting, you know, can you give $10, $5? So he collected $96. So he said, chalo, 96 at least I collect. So he put it in envelope, put from God, and put her address, and had the mailman deliver it. So she looked in her mailbox. $96. She was so happy. She had a wonderful dinner for her friends and so on. And then a week later, this man finds another letter addressed to God from her. So he said, why is she writing to God? So he opens the letter. She says, dear God, thank you for sending the money for dinner for my friends. But those thieving rascals in the post office stole $4. So faith is very, very important. And that's what people who don't know India, that's what, at least nowadays they know, but in the olden days, people who would go to India and they would think, you know, I'm taking this flight, or Westerner, I'm taking this flight to India. And soon as I get in Air India, the pilot and the air hostess will be chanting, you know, Vedic mantras. And I land in, you know, New Delhi airport, and people will be sitting in meditation, and everybody. And then they go, and then they see this crowd and this hustle and bustle and noise and confusion. And they say, where did I come? I thought India was the land of spirituality. I don't see any spirituality. But then if he looks around, he'll still find somebody like Raman Maharishi sitting somewhere in meditation, or somewhere in the forest, or somewhere in the Himalayas, there is some ashram. So even though in India it looks like it is lost and there is so much corruption and so much, you know, all these negativities, but there are still pockets where you see, like if you go to our ashram in Siddhabadi or go to our ashram in Mumbai, some of us have gone there. And you see that even in the, if you go to the Mumbai ashram, it is surrounded by the city. There is so much noise, so much disturbance, but there's an island of peace. You go sit there and you can meditate. There is a beautiful Jagdishwara temple. You can participate in lectures. So the point is that even though this knowledge appears to have been destroyed or lost, but there are pockets where these gurus, these mahatmas, these teachers are maintaining that. Same thing if you go to Ramakrishna Mission or you go to all these centers of learning, you will find that this knowledge has been preserved, has been passed on. So even though this knowledge is eternal, but temporarily it seems to have been lost. That's what Bhagavan says. Sakale nevah mahata, over the years, this knowledge has been as if destroyed or as if lost. So he says it's called lop ho gaya. It is hidden, but it is not destroyed. And this knowledge can never be destroyed and it will always continue as long as there are great gurus and teachers that we have.